Hey everybody, it's We Got the Beat. I'm Michael, that's Mindy. Woo! Yay! See, I'm trimming it down to make it easier so I don't trip over my own words and screw up the intro anymore. This episode's kind of a weird amalgam episode. We started off with one thing and realized it wasn't that much of a show, so we quickly, like I think you watched everything like this morning for the second half of this episode. So, most of this is Nickelodeon. And if it's not a Nickelodeon show, Nickelodeon clearly had the influence to get the other thing made. And what's interesting is sketch comedy for kids didn't exist, I think, before You Can't Do That on Television. I don't recall anything for children. Maybe The Muppets, if you count it, but not with actual human beings.
I don't think I'd count that.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can consider like, oh, this is... Well, wait, is Sesame Street sketches? It is, isn't it?
I don't think it counts.
Okay, but this is something clearly aimed for the teenage audience. Though, of course, they had viewers that were younger. You and I both watched it before we were teenagers.
What?
You Can't Do That on Television. We were watching that, I think we were six or something like that when we discovered it. And, of course... We didn't get to watch it all the time because we didn't have cable. We went to a family member who did have it. And I feel like Nickelodeon was a big, big deal. Even more so than like what everybody else our age group seemed to be obsessed with was MTV.
Yeah, I don't honestly remember. And we talked about this before and how like, I don't actually know what was normal.
Yeah, that's true.
I just think that I think I just did what I wanted to and I didn't care. I didn't really care what other people were doing.
I feel like
I don't know if that's the explanation.
I feel like a lot of my conversations got blank stares through most of my youth. Like, what did you guys do this weekend? You went to a party? Hey, did you go see Major League 2? Like, shut up, you dork. Stop talking about movies all the time. Hey, you guys know this band called Queen? And this is before Wayne's World made them cool. No one gave a shit about Queen for a while there. It's just funny how we were like fucking nerds, man. Like, our hit bands were like Men at Work, which were like 5 years earlier.
Side tangents, just a moment.
Yeah.
But nothing stops me dead in my tracks like when Men at Work comes on the radio.
Yeah.
And that actually happened to me the other day on my way to work, and I was like, oh no, I'm going to be 3 minutes late. So I don't even care.
I'm still, at this age, discovering stuff from the 80s that I had no clue about. And I was like, how did people not tell me about this? You know, Sisters of Mercy, The Cure, Susie and the Banshees, they're fucking great.
Yeah.
But like,
I think you just find things in the time that you need them.
Yeah, and it's funny because a lot of the stuff that we watched was always kind of on the cusp of normal anyway, because we were watching all that syndicated lower budget stuff, reruns on 55, which became the Fox channel. But I think everybody in a somewhat decent sized city had a channel that was like, we don't have any money, we can only afford these obscure things. Well, that was Nickelodeon to a T. They had no original programming for a long time. I think their first original show was Double Dare. So they're riding on British and Canadian and just weird imports that they're getting for nothing. And I remember in the morning, it was always like Pinwheel. You know, that the little kiddie stuff. And then the afternoons was kind of the middle school, elementary school maybe, but mostly middle school age group. And then at night when they introduced Nick at Night, holy shit. We went crazy for like Monkeys, Martin and Ronan Martin's Laugh-In, you know, stuff like that.
Oh god, I kind of forgot about that. You know, one of my coworkers the other day was like, she's like, what do you mean you grew up watching the Monkees? You're the wrong like age for that. And I was like, I couldn't remember what I watched it on. I said, oh, I think it was, I was always watching the stuff on Nick at Night, but I don't even know for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're the age group that, well, I guess people have it now with Friends, where shows from 20 years earlier sometimes 30 years earlier yes. was normal for, because that's what you would watch when you got home from school. You know, Leave It to Beaver, Bewitched, and I think, like, if you wanted a newer rerun, it was something crazy, like Brady Bunch, which is only, like, 14 years old, and people are like, what?
But really, it boiled down to syndication, right? That's yeah. how we were seeing this.
Yeah, and then cable, yeah. of course. Cable was weird because they couldn't afford the big packages of shows, so they would pick up shows that usually were, oh, this is on for a year or two, and we'll just air this every Saturday at midnight. You know, like Square Pegs is how I discovered that. And I think that's what, you can't do that on television, stuff like that, where they're like, well, we can't afford our own programming. We're going to go out and see what's available that has some history. I'm shocked they never picked up Degrassi.
Yeah, uh-huh, I agree.
That's one of those that seems so obvious, because by that point, I don't even think they're even in high school. I think they had just entered middle school, because Degrassi is interesting because you're watching the evolution of these kids through their entire school life. Because I believe it starts off like in third or fourth grade and then moves its way up.
I don't know about the first series, but the, you know, reboot of it that I watched a decent amount of. I think it really starts around sixth grade or so. So it's like middle school through high school.
Okay.
The interesting thing, like, again, I never watched the original series, but the reboot was like the kids of those kids.
Oh, interesting. I'm shocked.
So a lot
that...
of times, some of those actors from the original series came back and were playing parents and stuff.
You can't do that on television. Has never really been picked up again. There's been no real, like, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because it's a Canadian production, but also it feels like it's a very particular, you know, the guy who plays Les, you know, he plays every male character, every adult character in the show.
Yeah.
I think he owns the rights, and I believe he passed away, and that he's just not going to let anybody else do it. But for our generation, this was like such a strong cult hit.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I watched it constantly.
Yeah. And there's an era where we really were, like, we knew that particular cast. Moose was the main girl, and there was Lisa, who talked all the time. Not Azriel. I can't remember the one kid that kind of took over. He was the shorter one with the brown hair, kind of squinty eyes. And then I saw, like, episodes later where I was like, who are all these people? I don't recall, like, seeing the later years.
I honestly don't remember things very clearly.
Okay. And of course, it's talked about a lot that Alanis Morissette was on this show, but she's like in 10 episodes. It's not that big of a deal. It's just that's where the first thing that she had done.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And she was the one person from it that became famous.
Right. Did you... Alistair, that's his name, Alistair. And then one of the other kids, he works a lot. Like, we were looking him up, and he's one of the only kids that's had, like, a career. Like, he was on the show for 5 seasons, and he's had a bunch of other yeah. stuff. But in general, these were kind of like just kids just playing around, and once they were done with the show, that was it. They just... Because what he did was yes. cast real kids. He didn't want to cast, like, actors.
That's what I was going to say, that, like, with a lot of this stuff that I was watching... You can tell that these are just normal kids who weren't, like, I feel like, you know, since maybe the late 90s, or maybe even sooner than that, I don't know, with, like, everyone who was involved was, you know, even if it's, like, a game show and they're supposed to be normal people, they're really actors who are, just trying to get their face on TV. These kids were not like that. And it was interesting because it was so, it felt very grassroots and very, like, minimal everything, and they didn't cut that much. It was all a little awkward and unprofessional, but, I mean, maybe that was part of the charm?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, you do have a couple adult performers. Of course, Les and Abby played the mother and father, or just any sort of adult character, but Christine was an adult at the time they made the show. She came in... I believe season 3, because the show really isn't You Can't Do That on Television until then. It was a weird, like, I don't know, like a kid's version of SNL. They had musical guests. They had kind of a flimsy premise. They really hadn't worked out the kinks. And I think once they got Christine, aka Moose, as like not really a host, but like kind of the center character that everything revolves around. That's when they kind of get the format down. And I bet you that they streamline the production of the show by like having every single locker scene. You know when they hop out of the lockers to tell their jokes? Or, you know, like when they're in Barth's, the most disgusting fast food joint in history. Stuff like that. Yeah. They probably shot every single one of them at once. And then just, you know, after they did all the shooting for a few months, they slowly edited everything so that you would see it like a normal sketch show.
I don't know, maybe. I mean, that would probably be a smart way to do it.
Yeah, that's how Jim Varney was able to do his TV show, if you remember that. Hey, Vern, it's Ernest. That's how they shot it. They would do everything. If it was on a set, they shot 13 different versions, or 13 different sketches on the same set, and they got it all done in like 2 months so he could go back to doing his movies. Because I bet you they only really had these kids during the summer.
Oh, I see. That makes sense.
I mean, if they're not professional actors for the most part, I imagine they're just doing it during the summer and then they have to go back to school like normal.
Right. Yes, probably.
Maybe not so much.
Instead of going to summer camp, kids, they're like coping on this show.
Yeah. Of course, this is where we get the slime, which still, I believe, goes till today on Nickelodeon. Like, especially with their, the GAC Awards is what that award show that they have where they slime people randomly?
I think it's called the Teen Choice Awards.
I feel like that's something else. I thought there was a Nickelodeon GAC Award. But do you remember when you could buy the slime in stores in the toy section?
No.
No?
I don't remember, but I'm sure that was a brilliant move on their part.
Yeah, they had that, and I think it was Nickelodeon Floam were the two things they introduced like in the early 90s. Yeah.
I kind of remember that.
I'm pretty sure the Nickelodeon slime was the same exact slime that they had in the whole He-Man toy that a family member of ours had. Do you remember that nasty, greasy shit they would cover the He-Man toys in?
No.
Oh, okay.
I think that there's things that I've, like, blocked out. I don't know.
But, of course, there's the slime whenever you said, I don't know. And what is it? Did you just have to say water to get wet? I can't remember how you got splashed. I think you literally just have to say water.
I feel as though I am very ill-prepared for this conversation.
But you saw, like, the Greatest Hits episode, right? The one I sent you?
I think that I just watched several episodes, so maybe I did watch that one, yeah.
Okay. But there's a thing that I truly... It's hard for me to believe that they would be surprised when that happens, when they get slimed or sprayed with water. And yet, every single time, they look like they're just like, what the... Oh! You're like completely shocked. I don't know if they're just like, their head is somewhere else trying to remember their lines, that they're not thinking about what they're saying, and then they get hit.
I mean, I guess if you're saying something so innocuous that you would just say in a normal conversation... it could really catch you off guard. Yeah.
The very first time that they ever made the slime, that I shit you not, they just let food rot in the fridge for a week.
Ew.
Yeah, and then they poured it on the person and that person went home sick. And they had to stop production, so they had to come up with something else, which I believe is just corn syrup color and something, you know, like something like gelatin.
I can't believe someone thought that was a good idea. Let's pour rotting food on people?
Yeah.
Children?
Fucking nasty.
Oh, I wonder if that person got fired.
Yeah, I bet you somewhere in there is the seed of the whole Barth's Diner.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like it would make sense.
There was that. Why do people keep going back to Barth's is what I want to know, because they're always throwing up and he's always talking about rat burgers and stuff like that. This is like, why would you go?
I think that we're supposed to just forget about that part.
That actually became a running joke at my last job. I was telling someone about the show, and his catchphrase was, "I heard that." And we would run around the back room and doing this to each other on a regular basis. And people were like, "What are you doing?" Oh, it's a very particular thing. But there's yeah. that. There's the it's funny is a lot of his characters seem the exact same, because the guy who owns the fast food joint is also like very much like the father, just he has a much bigger gut and same voice.
Yeah, it's possible that he wasn't really that much of an actor either.
No, I think because he's also playing everybody. He's playing the production guy, you know, with the headset on, who's telling them what to do on the show. He's playing the general that has them up against the wall, going to shoot them, but he always gets shot. I thought he was pretty good, but those two characters are way too close for my taste.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say about this before we move on to the next one?
No. Okay. I just thought it was like, I'm going to be honest, like, especially the early episodes, I was like, this is weird.
Yeah.
And really chaotic.
Yeah, it doesn't work until about season two or season three, when, like I said, when they introduce Christina, she kind of becomes the head writer. She left the show, A, because by that point, I think she was 26, and she doesn't really come off, you know, it's a teenage show. It's hard to keep selling her as a teenager. But also, she created a really short-lived, very obscure TV show that I was obsessed with called Turkey TV.
Ooh.
Do you remember that at all?
I don't recall that either.
Yeah, that was...
Oh, God, what's wrong with me?
No. It was literally 13 episodes. It was just short films from all over the world that she edited. She found that she curated and made little sketches. Like, just, it was weird among them. It's kind of like a YouTube idea now, where you have a mixed list of all these just random sketches and little clips.
Well, she was just way ahead of her time.
Yeah. So as that was wrapping up, Nickelodeon needed another sketch show, and they tried with Welcome Freshman, and I don't know if you watched it. I did. I didn't think it was very good. I just kind of told you to skip it if you hadn't already watched it. What? So you didn't get to watch that one, right?
Yeah. No, I took your advice and didn't watch it.
We were really crazy about it when it aired. Remember, Sunday mornings on Nickelodeon were kind of a big deal, because that's when they had Ren and Stimpy, Clarissa Explains It All, Doug. And I want to say the last hour was always Welcome Freshman in 16 or 15 or whatever it started off as, with Ryan Reynolds.
I remember that sort of.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely watched some of it. But I have to look up this Welcome Freshman to know for sure.
It was four seasons, I believe. The first two are all based around a theme, so they would have sketches around that theme. And they had a really tall, goony, bald principal that we thought was hilarious, but everything else is terrible. Now, here's the problem, I think, with a lot of the shows of this time period, is that they're shot in Florida. And they don't have the same kind of people to choose from. It works for our next show, but it didn't work for Welcome Freshman and some other ones. But Roundhouse works, because those are adults. These guys have clearly like got their training in. They're doing theater shows. You know, I guarantee you that Roundhouse was a weekly, maybe, I don't know how they filmed it, but it feels like something that they would do for the tourists that would come to Universal Studios where they filmed. And they did it every single day, like four times a day, you know, whatever, maybe more. And they have it down pat. The rhythm and speed of Roundhouse is insane and truly impressive.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that was really appealing about it, is that it was super high pace intensity. But what did I say to you? It feels so much more... sophisticated. Yes.
Yeah, it's much more rehearsed. It's something about it. Like, and of course, you and I, we went to the theater all the time as a kid, so we already had an appreciation for it. And I think I had done background work on Wizard of Oz in middle school. I don't know if you had done theater yet, but we both had kind of an idea. It's an aesthetic that we liked, and I think that's why Roundhouse appealed to us. And plus, we were huge fans of Newsies, like, instantly the first time we saw it on video, and all of a sudden we're seeing, like, three or four guys from that in this show, and I think they just kind of grabbed us.
Yeah, I remember for sure being, oh, that guy's from Newsies, and I think that I was obsessed with that for approximately, until today. So,
Have you noticed on Disney, they changed the name on Disney Plus? It is not Newsies, it's Newsboys. I looked the other day and I was like, what the fuck is this? It's Newsies, what are you doing?
You want to know something else that I noticed? That's not the only time they've done that, although I didn't notice that one. I'll have to go look. That they actually did that recently with Zootopia.
Yeah.
They like changed the name of it on the Disney Channel too. Last time I was on there, it was like Zoolandia or something. I'm like, what the fuck?
Changing the title of something after it comes out confuses the shit out of me, and they keep doing it to Tom Cruise. You remember when it was called Edge of Tomorrow and not Live, Die, and Repeat? And the new Mission Impossible is
for real?
Yeah, it's now called Live, Die, and Repeat, and then in small letters it'll say Edge of Tomorrow. Dead Reckoning is no longer Dead Reckoning Part 1. It's just Dead Reckoning, and they got rid of it, and they're going to add a new title to the next one. Because I think people were like, I don't know if I want to see just part. You know, that's the thing that teenagers would do. Adults that see Mission Impossible don't want to see Part 1. This is my hard-earned money. I want to finish the fucking thing.
That's so strange to me. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, I can understand maybe the Part 1 thing, but, I mean, I guess you don't have to commit to any decisions anymore, do you?
Not really. Wow. So, Roundhouse was co-created by Buddy Sheffield. That's not a household name by any means. But if you find out that he's one of the co-creators of In Living Color, things make a lot more sense.
Yes.
Because...
Yes. The dancing. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he left, and I read the whole history of In Living Color, and it is really difficult, and a lot of people suffered because of Keenan Ivory and his ego, and then all of a sudden just dropping his complete and absolute interest in the show to go work on movies and left everybody just hanging. And he would burn through cast members, creators, writers like crazy. I mean, he makes Lorne Michaels look very, very patient. So Buddy Sheffield got the idea of if we did something like In Living Color for teenagers, especially since so many teenagers were watching In Living Color, but... If you look now, that show is really mean and pretty offensive, and it was trying to be something outrageous to get people's attention. Roundhouse is straight up, I mean, at best, PG. At worst, if you said PG-13, I would like, I don't know, man. It really is aimed for families.
It's very interesting how... they jump around constantly, just so fast. You can't even you can almost not keep up.
Yeah.
With how quickly they're switching scene to scene to scene. You're like, you're a kid in one, you're a parent in another. You know, and it's just like they don't rely on a lot of like costume and prop stuff. It's still pretty minimal, you know, to move from thing to thing to thing.
The dad. Shocks me that he didn't run anybody over. Every time I watch that, he's going full fucking speed at everybody, and somehow they get out of the way. I'm like, oh my god, I'm like sweating here.
Yeah.
And that guy was one of the main writers, John Crane, who plays Dad. He's always going around in this mobile lounge chair complaining to everybody. And
Yeah,
and he's a lot of fun, and he's like, I think the only like full-on adult, like guy out of his 20s. Everybody else looks pretty fresh-faced. Like I said, half of them are from Newsies, so you're talking mostly teenagers or early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
What's the one guy? The one that was definitely recognized instantly. I think that was Mark David, the one that kind of has bigger front teeth. He's kind of like their Jim Carrey. Really, really skinny brown hair. He almost steals every episode because he has so much energy.
Are you talking about the guy that was also in Newsies?
Yes, the one with glasses. It is Mark David. Okay, I'm looking at a picture of him right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, he almost walks away with the whole show because he's so entertaining and so full of energy.
It's a good, you know, that was a very unique situation that they had with that show. How long did it run?
It was on for 4 seasons, 13 episodes a season. I think 13, something like that. So, like, that's what I feel like. I feel like they worked out their 13 episodes way ahead of time and rehearsed them and were ready to go. And they would just do a new one every week and, you know, and do it, probably get it completely down until there was no errors or hiccups or anything like that. I'm guessing they probably filmed every single performance and finally just aired the one that was good since it was in front of a live studio audience at a studio, like a tour studio kind of thing.
Yeah, so you could probably get like tickets to an episode or something, and so they weren't filming it at like Universal Studios Orlando.
I think that's where they were filming. So, like, say you went with your family, you paid $50 for the tour or whatever, and then somewhere along the way, they were probably like, okay, everybody, it's time for a break in our tour to go see a live show, and we're taping Roundhouse right now. Would you like to see it? And they did that over and over and over every day.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, I remember going to Universal Studios in Orlando and being in the taping of a show, but I don't remember what the show was. It wasn't something that was really, really cool. Otherwise, I'd remember.
When you...
You didn't have to get special tickets necessarily either. That was just like, came with the ticket to the park and you got to tour like the Nickelodeon Studios or something.
It's not the same, but it reminds me of, and I could be wrong, didn't you do something at like our Heritage Days Festival, whatever it's called, I can't remember, Fall Festival, where you had to perform a play like 6 times a day or something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did that a lot. It was like a melodrama, and it's, you know, the nature of a melodrama is pretty obvious because it's right there in the name.
Yeah.
To be as over the top, and, you know. And you did it, like, every hour.
Yeah, so it's I think it's like that. Maybe not that often, because it's much more complicated. But I bet you they did it numerous times a day. But what amazes me is that these kids are dancing around, and they're dancing. They're not doing light dancing. This is fucking, like, challenging, like, the Los Angeles cheerleaders, you know. these are full-on, like, crazy dances that only a young person could possibly pull off, because I think I would tear every muscle attempting it. And then they're going right into a comedy sketch, and they're not out of breath. You don't see sweat. You don't seem out of breath. It's truly impressive.
I know. You have to wonder, like, what kind of, like, cardio do they do? You know, that was probably part of it. Like, you guys have to rehearse, but you also have to, like, work out.
Yeah.
You know.
Like, burning probably, like, 10,000 calories a day easily.
Probably, yeah.
Anything else you want to say before we move on?
No, but I would, other than, I guess of all the shows, you know, that we rewatched or revisited from this time period or earlier, definitely the most sophisticated in its writing and, what's the word I'm looking for? Production value, I guess?
Yeah,
maybe?
My problem with the last of the sketch shows, is all that so badly wants to be Saturday Night Live for kids. And instead of having its own identity, and that kind of bothered me. Though it is the most successful of the bunch. I mean, there's been revivals, there's been reunions, people still talk about this all the time. There's more stars out of this than any of the shows. And it was fine. Of course, the most popular one probably is the whole Good Burger sketch. It fucking kills. I can't believe that Kel isn't more famous than he is, because he fucking destroys.
Yeah, I think just based on, you know, I listened to Keenan's book recently, and I think the main takeaways from it were, like, the explanation, really, for maybe... for Kel is, like, he, one, kind of wanted to move away from acting into music. It was really his, like, bigger passion. He like wanted to be a rapper, I guess.
Oh, okay.
And then the second thing was that he got married and started having a family pretty young.
Oh, okay. That explains some things.
So I think those are the two main things of why he maybe didn't have the career that he should have.
So it's interesting that Kel, I believe, Keenan, I believe, has been in sketch comedy unbroken for what, 30 years? I almost wonder if it's on purpose. Like, I don't know if he knows this or not, but it's like unbroken. 94 to, and this year will be his 30th year in sketch.
I'm not sure. I think he probably knows. I mean, how would you not know that?
No, I'm sorry. But I'm wrong. There is a gap. So there's a 3-year gap.
There was a gap where he couldn't get work at all. So,
really?
And he almost quit acting.
Huh. Because he's doing Keenan and Kel at the same time as all of that, correct?
Yes. Yes, that is correct. At least part of the time, it was both.
Why did I think that he was Fat Albert before he was on SNL? But it shows he was on SNL a year before Fat Albert. This is really interesting.
You know, I'm not really sure. I think that he's just been acting for so long that it seems like he's always been acting, and it's so confusing. So, yeah, there was a period of time where he couldn't get work, and he was thinking about quitting. But I think that his, like, it was one of those stories, like, Nick Cage, where his accountant, like, stole all his money. And it kind of, he says that he's in some ways almost grateful that it happened, because it made him incapable of giving up, because he was broke. He needed to work, so he just wouldn't stop trying to get jobs. And so that's kind of how.
This is his 20th anniversary, though, of being on SNL. 386 episodes. And he was doing, wasn't he doing like his own show just recently on NBC for like 3 or 4 years? How does he have the internet?
I will tell you that, yes, he had his own show. I think it was on for 2 seasons. I wanted very desperately to like it, but there was something really off about the comedic timing. And I don't know if it's because he was trying to, he had Don Johnson, of all people, to work off of. And it was really awkward. But there was also, you know, no live audiences, I don't think, at the time. And there was, like, a laugh track, and it felt very dated and awkward.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I mean, laugh tracks are weird.
There's nothing...
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with him. I don't think that he's untalented. And there was nothing really wrong with the story itself, because basically it's like his life, kind of.
Okay.
To some degree. In the case of the show, I believe that, like, his wife, he was a widow. And so that's why, like, Don Johnson was his, like, father-in-law or something. And he was there to help him raise his kids. As opposed to just, I mean, I think his normal circumstances, like, just divorce, you know.
I can see why Don would take the job. It's something that challenged him that he had never done before. He's really funny in Eastbound and Down, but you're talking, that's a film thing, not in front of a live studio audience, probably got multiple takes to get it right. And he was only on, I think, 4 episodes out of 30. It had to be different. I don't know if some people just aren't meant to be in front of a live studio audience.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'd have to say you should watch an episode to understand what I mean, because I don't want to diss him.
Yeah.
But I'm really disappointed for him that was his shot to have his own show, and it just wasn't really worthy of him, I don't think.
No, but I also I don't understand how Lorne Michaels is able to capture so much magic with SNL, but his three attempts at doing shows in front of a live studio audience have failed. He did, doggone it, I think it's called The Night Show or something. It was only on for 6 episodes in 1984, and it had John Candy and a whole bunch of other people, and it was a massive flop, though I thought it was fucking hilarious. The one that he did with John Mulaney was a huge flop, and they tried fixing it, and it didn't work. And then
Was it the John Mulaney show?
Yeah, you know, the one with Martin Short and Asim Pedrad, I think was her name. It just didn't
work.
It wasn't good.
No. It was not good at all. And maybe it's the same kind of issues, but I really liked John Mulaney at the time, and I thought, oh, this is going to be great. But it was like Seinfeld, but even more awkward. Like, I think Seinfeld's funny, but Jerry Seinfeld is not a good actor. And you can see, it, when you're watching episodes of Seinfeld, you can see how not good of an actor he is. Yeah. And that everybody else is holding him up.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Sort of like Mulaney felt, I guess.
Yeah. We're going off track here, I apologize.
I know.
We don't really need to talk about Amanda Bynes that much because we covered her so much in the episode we did just a few months ago. But she almost has as many like repeating characters that audiences love and I thought was fun as Kel did. Those two probably win the most repeat-worthy characters.
Do you mean Kel or do you mean Keenan?
I meant Kel. I don't remember Keenan doing that many. Okay. I remember the French talking... bathtub character, and I remember Good Burger. Well, also, you have to remember that I'm So Cool Kids, all that is not a show that I really knew. By this point, I believe I was in college, so I would only catch a little bit here and there when you would watch it, so I had an idea. I remember that kid, I think his name was Josh. He looks a lot different now, but he was the one that was 100% a replica of Jim Carrey, which, look, I said this about the kid in Roundhouse. He had some of the same energy, but I didn't feel like he was trying to mimic him. I really feel like either he chose to or the producers made him do it. It's exhausting watching him try to own the show when he clearly doesn't have the sketches to back it up.
Yeah, I do. I bet that it was probably a combination decision, because I don't really think the impression that I got, at least, was that all that they didn't have a lot of creative control over anything. No.
And this is from the guys from Head of the Class, Brian Robbins and Dan Schneider. And they became like powerhouses. I think if we talked about Brian Robbins is now running Nickelodeon, which is weird, and Dan Schneider has been ostracized for apparently really, really bad behavior towards children.
I mean, he should be in prison from what I hear. But
oh, really? I didn't know it was that bad.
Well, maybe not that bad, but I think it's Joss Whedon level. Like, he wasn't allowed to be in the same room as people under 18 kind of thing.
Oh. Okay, ew.
He was like directing and giving instruction from like a whole different location or in a room by himself, because at some point people knew how bad he was and they were trying to cover for him.
Wait, are you talking like shitty behavior, like mean, or was he talking like he likes little girls, little boy, whatever, you know?
I think both.
How did you not get fired?
I'm not really sure, but I heard things about trying to get like teenage girls intoxicated and really sexualizing them and stuff. I don't know, but
there's always
it is sad, but it kind of puts a damper on some of the like fun things from my childhood. But
yeah, I had no idea it was that bad. Well, it makes you wonder if that had an effect on Amanda. You know, what laid the groundwork? Has it always been there, like part of her? Or is it, I mean, I wonder if a lot of these kids ran away from the business because of shit like that. I mean, I know that it pushes a lot of kids out anyway, because that's just the way the world works. As you get older, there's more and more competition, and sometimes are more talented. They've had more practice, you know.
Yeah, the thing is, you know, if we're going to talk about Amanda Bynes, it seems like she was probably like 10 when she started on all that. And, you know, she was by far the youngest. And I think that, you know, Keenan and Kel were probably like 16.
Yeah, I believe Lori was the
oldest.
Yeah, I think she was the only one that was technically an adult at the time.
I don't know if she was an adult, but she was definitely the oldest one on the show. And I think that everybody sort of, you know, treated Amanda like a little sibling, but it was very clear from the very first episode she was on her immense talent, you know?
Yeah. Well, I thought Lori was really funny, too. Stuff I saw, I thought she was really good. That first initial cast is the only one that really made an impression on me. The only thing I remember after that was the kid from Pete, Danny, I think his name is, that he joined the show, and he was kind of the anchor. A lot of it's because people already knew him and were comfortable with him, but it was also like, he's ready to be, like, the lead, the star.
Mm-hmm.
There's this kid, I can't remember his name, but he was on Malcolm in the Middle. I remember he was one of the Krellborn kids with Malcolm, and he moved over from that over to All That.
I can't remember, because I did recently watch every single episode of Malcolm in the Middle.
Really? And, you made it through the whiny years. Okay.
Yep, I sure did. It was really hard for a few years.
Yeah.
But yes, I recently completed it. And what was my point? And I jumped around a lot with All That, watching various, you know, several episodes from several different seasons. But yeah.
I watched the Greatest Hits reunion, whatever you want to call it, like the 10-year reunion. It's so funny they're celebrating their 10 years not knowing that there's only like 6 episodes left and they decided to cancel it. Just, I don't know if the anniversary special was to garner interest to save the show or what, but like that was like spring of 94 and then the show itself like ended like a year later. But I think I was somewhere along the way it came back for a season or two.
I think so, yeah.
Where does Nick Cannon fit into all this?
Honestly, I don't know.
Okay, it must have been after your time watching it because All That was kind of a launching pad, and I feel like they were doing the shows at the same time because Amanda Bynes got her own show, and then Josh and Drake somehow came out of that, right?
Yeah, well, all the episodes of the Amanda show I watched, every single episode had Josh in it, and I mean Drake in it, and I don't know when Josh came along because I watched, I guess, a handful of episodes from season 1 and 2.
Okay, so they were never cast members of All That, they were just something else.
I don't think so, but okay. Again, I know I haven't seen every episode of All That, so I could definitely have missed some things.
Did they have hosts and musical guests on All That, or is it just straight up the sketches?
No, I didn't see any hosts or musical guests on All That ever.
Okay. I'm just curious
again,
how much you're up
to. I know I haven't seen all the episodes. So.
Yeah, the because I only watched the anniversary special and they had a musical guest and Frankie Muniz was kind of the host. So,
That's weird. Okay.
They had, I think it was Cisco was no, oh, doggone, I can't remember who the musical guest was. But it was someone like really early in their career and I think who's that girl that sings Umbrella? Rihanna. I want to say it was Rihanna, like when she was first starting and I was like, whoa. Frankie Muniz is the host of the special, so I thought maybe that's how the show was. Like, this just, they had a guest and a musical person.
Maybe at some point they shifted to be more like Saturday Night Live, but yeah. I don't recall that.
And, well, I mean, it has some of the In Living Color flavor, too, especially with the intro, you know, because In Living Color had the one by Heavy D and the Boys, and then they had TLC do the one for All That. You can see the influence of In Living Color way more than you can SNL, but this one, sketch comedy, is a phenomenon. Sketch comedy will never be hotter than it was in the mid-90s, because you have SNL is hitting its absolute peak audience, like in the early 90s with the Frat Pack, you know, Adam Sandler and all them. Have Kids in the Hall. You have, for super nerds, there was a TV show on Comedy Central called Almost Live out of Seattle where Bill Nye the Science Guy started as Speedwalker.
For real?
Yeah, do you remember that?
No, No,
you gotta watch it. It's really funny. It's very particular to the Pacific Northwest, though, so if you live in Portland, you get the jokes way more. But, we had Mr. Show, you had The State, of course, In Living Color. But everybody, for all those that people remember, there's a dozen more that had a chance and failed. Like Downtown Julie Brown had her own show, a sketch show with Jennifer Aniston. There's the John Leguizamo show called House of Buggin. Stuff like that. Mad TV is just about to launch. Sketch comedy was so fucking huge. And besides SNL, I couldn't tell you a single sketch comedy show in the last decade. The Whitest Kid You Know, I think, is the last one.
I mean, Key and Peele?
Well, how long ago was that? I guess that was in the last decade, right?
I'm not sure when it stopped. That's the first, the one that pops in my head. But
Okay.
you're right. You're right. I understand the point you're trying to make. It's definitely on the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about other stuff that we were super, super into that maybe, people didn't even realize. I think we were really obsessed with sketch comedy, and I think that explains a lot about my personality.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Ben Stiller, The State,
oh, right.
Stella, Kids in the Hall. Whew.
Yeah, I just think there's a very particular underground comedy kind of coming in around this era. And I don't know, I think when I discovered SNL in 1989, it blew my fucking mind. I had never seen anything like it. And I remember renting the tapes. Like, of course, the Eddie Murphy one is the one that really just blew us away because it was so good. But it's just like, oh, this works for my attention span. And then we got Comedy Central. And then, not only was it, SNL was on every fucking day. Kids in the Hall was on every fucking day. But also you had short attention span theater, which had a mixture of everything. Stand-up, sketches, promos for movies. You know, everything was kind of geared towards clips. And another thing that's like an early TikTok, early YouTube, is Comedy Central doing these clip shows for people that just want now.
Yeah, I guess that explains a lot. I haven't really thought about it.
You know what? This went longer than we ever expected. So if it's okay with you, let's split this into two episodes.
Okay.
All right, let me, everybody, thank you for listening to this episode. We're going to do our short, probably a mini-sode, but that's what we thought about this too, about game shows geared towards kids in the 80s and early 90s. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this. And Mindy, say goodbye.
Bye.